And welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, I'm wishing you the best. And I'd love for you to visit us. The best place to really find us is at naturalnurse.com and also Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And if you go to calendar of events, you will see the many up and coming classes and workshops that we have available. So very soon is coming a class called Herb Magic, Herb Medicine, which talks about the use of plants in magic, as well as their medicinal aspects. And that offers 3 CEU credits for nurses, nurse practitioners, massage therapists, acupuncturists, registered dietitians, clinical nutritionists. But if you're none of those, you can just take it just for your own fun and understanding. And you also can get a certificate saying that you took it, if you'd like. Then we have a most wonderful class starting, and that's in March, but I'm starting to talk about it now because people are registering already. And this is called the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification Class. And it includes 4 classes, and also at the end, you get 18 CEU credits if you are any of those licensed professionals, but you can take it just for your own knowledge as well, and you still get a certificate, which is the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course. It's also usable towards, if you want to work towards becoming an RH. An RH is a recognized registered herbalist. If you want to work towards that, all of these classes go towards the learning that you need to do to complete that. And one of the things I do is speak to people about career paths in natural health. That's one of the favorite things that I'm doing these days, because there's always room to do one-on-one with people for their own health and wellness. And Dr. Eugene Zamperone, my partner, is really involved in doing that. Well, my focus right now is on working with individuals wherever you are in your life path, whether you are a health professional or whether you're a graphic design artist or whether you understand retail, whatever your expertise is, you can develop a path towards using that as your profession, but shifting it to natural. And many people are really happy once they do that. I had a woman who recently opened an all-natural esthetist studio, for instance. When we first talked, she didn't even remember that way back when she was already retired and not so young, but she remembered through our work together that way back when she had gotten an esthetist certificate way back in high school, but then she never used it. And it wound up that she was able to just get that certificate back again just by taking a very short refresher course and, of course, paying fees to the state that she lived in. That's always part of life. And then she was able to open where she's using all organic facial products, and she's doing fantastically well in her new career. So there's so many paths. If you're a graphic design artist, for instance, or if you know how to do Facebook and all these media things, every one of the companies that sell natural products need people to do that. So although you might be doing the same job, your content around you and the discussions around you and the meetings with your colleagues is all about natural. So you're within the midst of that. So all kinds of paths forward, and that's called Natural Nurse Career Paths. And that's a class that I give all the time. I have it as a group class on the archives. We have lots and lots of classes on demand. If you want to see the classes on demand, when you go to naturalnurse.com, then a really good place to go for that is under services. We have an entire link called Natural Nurse Academy. At a natural nurse academy, you can take any number of courses, such as opiates, the scientific validation of herbal medicine, botanicals for lung health and the respiratory system. That was very, very, very popular right now with COVID still going on and all kinds of viral and respiratory infections going on. And each of these classes is just a click away when you go to the Natural Nurse Academy. And that also offers, each of them offers CEU credits for health professionals and certificates, both for health professionals and for anyone who takes it. So you may want to think about your shopping list and what might someone want for a gift rather than just another thing around the house. Perhaps they would like some knowledge. Or if they would like a thing around the house, you could go to naturalnurse.com and under products, you can look at EMF meters and shields about the many devices that you might want to use to help deflect the electromagnetic fields that we are all inundated with constantly. And we have recommendations for that. Well, you also might want to click on books because we have about, we have 16 books, but I think we have about 10 of them listed on Amazon that I wrote. Some I wrote myself, some myself and my partner, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, wrote together. And all those books are available just a click away. Go to naturalnurse.com books. And somebody you know might need help with their arthritis. And we have a fabulous book. I mean, I really think it is the best book on the market for arthritis called Arthritis, an Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide. And you can find it right there on our website, or the Definitive Guide to Weight Loss, 10 Healthy Ways to Permanently Shed Unwanted Pounds. And we have the Natural Medicine Chest, which is a book that deeply goes into herbs. Or if you want to spice it up, we have the Natural Guide to Great Sex, which includes all kinds of information about ancient and modern sexual enhancement traditional practices, including foods and herbs and exercises. So all kinds of ideas for the holidays and beyond for your health and wellness. And we're so happy that many of you are on our mailing list. If you'd like to join our mailing list, all you have to do is go to naturalnurse.com, the bottom of the page, just click join mailing list, and you put in one thing and one thing only, that's only your email. And we don't send out a lot. Those of you who are on my mailing list know, you know, it's like once a month or less, and we don't inundate you with email. But if you do put your email in, then you'll get an email saying you need to click again to confirm, because, you know, that's what has to be done to legally then be able to email you with our newsletter. So I'm so happy that you're with us today, and always we're clocking hundreds of thousands of downloads, hundreds of thousands of downloads of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we're so happy to provide that for you. And today we'll be bringing on our guest, Udaya Thomas, who is a PhD, MPH, and APRN. What does that all mean? Well, Udaya is a first-generation immigrant who was born in India but raised in Pennsylvania and Ohio, so she's a Midwest girl. And she has lived, worked, and traveled extensively in the U.S. and four other continents, including Asia, Africa, South America, and Europe. And she has had a variety of positions, such as a social worker, a nurse, researcher, an international public health officer, as well as a yoga instructor, and also a primary care nurse practitioner, very involved in patient care. So she just finished recently her PhD in nursing from Walden University, and she lives in Florida with her husband and is a member of the mindfulness meditation community and practices in Broward County. So we are so happy to have Dr. Udaya Thomas here with us today. Welcome, Udaya.
Thank you, Helen, and thank you so much for your generous introduction.
Well, you've done all those things. So, and that's a path. That's a path and an ongoing path. It seems like, you know, you get to a point and you're working really hard in one area. And then, you know, you either want to expand or you find something else that you want to do. But what's so fascinating is how did that evolve for you? So let's go back in time to a little girl growing up in the Midwest. Pennsylvania and Ohio. That's not New York City.
No, it's not.
So what was your experience like as a child there?
Well, I came at a fairly young age with my mother and two siblings. My father was already here. He came on a scholarship, an international scholarship to study. And so it was a pretty big change for all of us. Initially, you know, there were a lot of, you know, fresh off the boat, we call them FOB, or nowadays they say fresh off the jet experiences that we had, being, you know, one of the few brown folks in very rural Ohio. So we spent a few years while my father finished his graduate studies in Pittsburgh. And then we moved to a very rural place in Ohio where he found a job. You know, he had faced a lot of discrimination looking for work. And so, you know, that sort of set the stage for what we were to experience in the coming years. And the community, you know, it took some time to recognize us and really accept us. And, you know, there were definitely some hard points where I experienced discrimination and bullying, but there were a lot of other community members that wrapped their arms around us as well. So we always tried to focus on the positive aspects of living with fresh air and growing our own food in our own garden and being part of a small community and really, you know, becoming closer to each other as a family unit as well in those kind of circumstances.
Well, that must have been an interesting. Now, was there a group of people from India where you lived, or were you sort of an isolated family?
We were somewhat isolated. There was a neighboring town not far from us that had a few Indians who we connected with, and our family physician was also Indian. So there was a few connections. And we also went to visit back Pittsburgh sometimes, you know, to get sort of Indian spices and Indian products that we weren't able to get in rural Ohio. So we made our connections and also really embraced the community that we were in. My father actually was a Presbyterian pastor. So, you know, in that sense, we were very lucky because we had a community who we could get really close to and know, and they could know us for us as humans and see the connections that we all have as one versus the differences, but at the same time also learn from, you know, our original culture, which is from Kerala, India. And grow together that way.
So that was an interesting start in a place that, you know, I'm not too familiar with the Midwest. I have visited there at times, but that was your start. And what made you then start on your professional life journey?
Well, actually, you know, I was my dad's sort of sidekick for going to the hospital and hospice. And not too many six-year-olds know the term hospice, I don't think.
Well, yeah. Right. And what was your experience of that? Because that's where people basically are kind of end stage.
Yeah. So, you know, I think he took me along as, you know, people like to see young children and health and happiness. So, you know, I was maybe a little, you know, trick card in his pocket, so to speak. And I'm sure my siblings also went around with him as well. But yeah, it really kind of opened my eyes to health and healing and transitions and what could be done through, you know, just being there for someone and just really listening to them and being open to hearing their stories, listening to music, music therapy, just being exposed to all the different natural ways of healing and medicine at a very, very young age. And then, you know, we grew most of all of our own food. My mom never really purchased anything processed. And so, you know, we had from a very young age exposure to picking wild berries and growing herbs and vegetables and things like that. So I was always really interested in health and wellness. And I knew that I wanted to do something with that. Now, exactly what that was, I wasn't quite sure. Initially, I, you know, look around me and see all these Indian doctors and think I have to become an Indian doctor, and didn't see a lot of Indian nurses in that community. So that wasn't really a path that I had sought. But I like to say that nursing chose me, you know. Initially, you know, my father also had social work and counseling practice aside from his pastoring. And so, you know, having all those experiences with him, I was drawn to that as well. So when I went and did my undergraduate degree, I actually started out pre-med and found that, you know, it wasn't really for me. And it was a hard decision, but I took a sociology class and just really kind of opened my eyes to the way of structures and policies and the way the world operates, and tying all that together with my upbringing, and decided to go that route. So I ended up doing social work initially and found that I was not getting as much hands-on as I would have liked, touching, you know, being around patients and, you know, the aspect of the, you know, healing touch. And so, you know, through various different experiences and, you know, life happens, I started taking some, you know, more courses and considered different professions like naturopathy and doctor of osteopathy, and then nursing, because my first stop after college was volunteering in Arizona, on the border of Mexico and Arizona. And that is when I met my first nurse practitioner. And I said, wow, you can do this? And it's kind of, to me, nursing wraps all sort of the natural approaches with public health and looking at, you know, populations and serving those who have less resources and so forth. So I started sort of like connecting all the dots slowly, slowly, as I journeyed forward from, you know, social work to entering nursing and being a nurse, both home care nurse, free clinics, emergency room, different experiences. I wanted to gather different experiences to really understand the system and what people go through, and really kind of try to put together why things are happening and what's happening, and why are there so many people that are disenfranchised in this country of so many resources.
And so, what do you mean by disenfranchised of resources?
So, I mean, you know, the history of this country and colonization and slavery and, you know, the drawing of districts, redlining, and, you know, basically the powers that be putting, you know, constructing communities in such a way that they had less access to services and to food and things like that. So I think being cognizant of all those things and also, you know, tying into my international life as a child. And also, you know, I sprang forward and did a degree in public health also and focused on international health and nutrition. And, you know, that's why I say, like, you know, my travels and my work internationally, you know, opened my eyes in one direction. But then when you look at what's happened in this country over time and, you know, realize that the structures that were built from early on were not in favor of Native Americans or African Americans, as we call them. And, you know, the sort of generational trauma that has been experienced and, you know, can't be undone, but has to be looked at, you know, directly. And
so with your vast array of experiences internationally, is that same pattern repeating itself all over the world, or is that a strictly American phenomenon?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it, you know, it depends on, you know, where you are, but I think there are some clear differences. I think we're in the US, we're so multicultural and so many different immigrants come to this country, but the history on which we're based is also very, you know, determines a lot of how things play out. And so I'll give you an example. One of our, you know, one of our board members who's Haitian and grew up in Spain told me that, you know, until she was an adult and came here as an adult, she never experienced discrimination when she was growing up. Now, you know, some of that may be class oriented versus color of her skin. But and when I say board member, I mean integrative medicine for the underserved.
Oh, you're right. And we didn't bring that up yet. So we will, because right. Remember, we have
Sorry.
A full hour. No, that's okay. We have a full hour today.
Yeah. So and we've had a lot of personal conversations. And so sorry for the indirect reference there. But anyway, so that's just one sort of example of how that happens. And also, I think, you know, when you're from another country, everybody, you know, for the most part looks like you, you know, there may be small expat communities, but your sense of self and self-esteem and the way that you can navigate in your own country is very different than when you come to a country and you kind of stand out. You know, and as a young girl,
you had that experience yet you excelled I mean, everything you do is with such excellence. Now that happened, I don't think because of being from another country. I think it has to do with focus, determination, and hard work.
Well, yes. And also, you know, a strong family unit, a family that really, you know, kind of stayed together, held together, you know, operated in, you know, vacation together, ate together, you know, grew their food together. There were a lot of strengths. And that's one of the things that I really like to focus on in my work as well with my patients is more of a holistic strengths-based approach. You know, we could talk about the negative all day long, you know, and we could talk about discrimination all day long. But if we focus on, you know, strengths, we can certainly overcome a lot of barriers and be an example for other brown girls out there. So I think that's very true. I think that, you know, I'm very grateful for all of the support that I've gotten over the years. Not that I haven't worked hard, I have worked hard. But I've also been able to make some connections. I think my last name too also was very helpful because my last name is Thomas and it is a colonized name. It comes from Saint Thomas, one of the disciples of Jesus, who, you know, traveled to South India, Kerala, and converted the Hindus there at that time, Christianity, before he moved on to Chennai and was murdered there by fanatics. But, you know, the name itself is colonized. And so the last name Thomas probably opened more doors for me.
That is interesting. Yeah.
A lot of people thought that I was married to a white man.
Or yourself, or yourself on an application or something before they see it.
Right. Right. Of course, my first name kind of gives away that there's something, some other spice. some spicy thing going on there, but my accent is very American, having come here at a pretty young age. But yeah, I think, you know, I think that has opened some doors. You know, I haven't changed my, I haven't decolonized my name and taken the S off. I have thought about it. I did not take, you know, the name of my, the last name of my spouse, which was intentional as well, because I think once you're a professional, it just makes things a little difficult.
That's true. I've always made that decision myself. So we're going to take a little break right here. And we're going to listen to the Natural Medicine Chest. When we come back, we are going to go into a really interesting topic with Dr. Adaya Thomas. We'll be talking about integrative medicine for the underserved, which is an organization, IM4, number 4, US. We will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll explore the medicinal properties of the plants of the ephedra genera, focusing on the traditional Chinese ephedra, also known as mahuang.
Many species of the plant ephedra are used today in medicine throughout the world. The most medicinal of these are ephedra sinica, or Chinese mahuang, and ephedra nevadensis, also known as Mormon tea. Most of the research on ephedra has been performed on mahuang, whose stems and branches have been used as a traditional Chinese medicine for over 5,000 years in the treatment of asthma, hay fever, bronchitis, as well as the common cold.
Ephedra species are erect evergreen shrubs which grow in segmented bamboo-like joints reminiscent of straw ending in thin wisps. They typically are desert plants preferring arid conditions on dry, rocky, and sandy slopes. The Chinese ephedra, mahuang, has earned an impressive reputation as a source of the alkaloid chemical called ephedrine. In the West, scientists became interested in the medicinal usage of mahuang after they isolated ephedrine and pseudoephedrine in 1923. Today, synthetic derivatives have become widely used in prescription and over-the-counter medications. In 1993, over 40 million prescriptions in the U.S. contained these alkaloids.
Ephedra and its relatives are considered to act pharmacologically as sympathomimetic compounds. This means that they stimulate the sympathetic part of our central nervous system, responsible for the release of adrenaline, which leads to the fight or flight response. Ephedra also affects the cardiovascular system by increasing the blood pressure and causes a relaxation and dilation of the bronchial smooth muscles in asthmatics. Ephedra can shrink the swelling of the delicate mucous membranes which line the respiratory system, thus drying up watery discharges, unstuffing clogged nasal and sinus passages, which accompany colds, sinus conditions, and allergies.
In both animal and human studies, mahuang has been shown to accelerate weight loss. It has been shown not only to suppress appetite, but to increase the metabolic activity of the adipose or fat tissue. Therefore, ephedra's weight-reducing effects are most significant in individuals who have a low metabolic rate or a sluggish thyroid gland.
Mahuang is a powerful herb which, when abused, can cause some unwanted side effects. Ephedra should not be taken by those with high blood pressure, nervousness or anxiety, insomnia, cardiac conditions, or pregnancy. Studies indicate that when used in conjunction with other Chinese herbs in a traditional formula, mahuang does not have any of these effects and has remarkable beneficial effects on human health.
We recommend consulting a healthcare practitioner knowledgeable in the use of botanical medicine before using mahuang, so you can be further educated about its totality of effects. And before using herbal preparations with mahuang, check to see if you are sensitive to its effects by starting with the minimal dose and working up to a therapeutic dose. Logically, since ephedra is a stimulant itself, it should be used prudently with other stimulants, beverages, or drugs with stimulant effects. Again, consult with your natural healthcare practitioner.
So, listeners, remember mahuang, the traditional Chinese ephedra, and make sure to include it in your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back once again to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. You can visit us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Get on our mailing list, look around the website, listen to podcasts there and also at prn.fm. And we have thousands of articles that are free to access, as well as our books, which make great gifts, and our Natural Nurse Academy, which are archives classes that are available anytime. So today, we're so happy to be speaking to our guest, Dr. Adeya Thomas, who's an integrative nurse practitioner at Memorial Primary Care in Hollywood, Florida. So, Dr. Thomas, tell us about what goes on at Memorial Primary Care. I know that's like a mainstream kind of clinic, but you've brought in a lot of integrative thought processes, as well as the organization, which I imagine anyone can join, which is IM4US. That's how you find the integrative medicine for the underserved. Is that what that name means?
Yes. So integrative medicine for the underserved is really about focusing on that particular population. So IM4US is the only organization focused on integrative health and medicine specifically for patients who have less resources and are, you know, designated in a safety net hospital per se area, or a food desert, you know, that has less access to food. Patients basically who have less resources than many other patients. And that could be a combination of folks that receive Medicaid, Medicare, those who are not insured, those who are undocumented. That is our patient population that we focus on trying to train and support practitioners who work in those types of communities. And Memorial Primary Care is considered a safety net. It is under the Memorial Health System, which is considered a safety net health system. So a safety net health system is one in which there are government funding and support for serving the underserved or under-resourced, as I like to call them, and allocates funding to support a sliding scale program so that patients can more affordably access primary care and not use emergency room for their health care, or go without health care because they're not able to access healthcare.
Right. And I've really been lecturing quite a bit in areas like that, really supporting people. Now, of course, if you are undocumented, I don't think you could go onto healthcare.gov and buy insurance.
No.
Is that true? You cannot, correct?
No.
But almost anyone else, if you're documented, you know, I really support people trying, because I can't even tell you where I live, which is in a senior community, how many of these seniors like don't even try to get health insurance because they just think it's too hard to go through the process. And other people, families that I have helped go on that website, and it's amazing right now that you can get some very good health insurance for zero money or $20 a month, something like that, but not if you're not documented.
Correct. And so the sliding scale program at Memorial really helps to, you know, and the caveat is I am not in the administration, so hopefully I don't say anything incorrectly. But from my own experience as a practitioner, the, you know, patients are, you know, able to, you know, come to the practice and receive basic medical care, as well as any specialist who is part of the program and accepts seeing those patients. So my patients pay anything from nothing for a visit to $2 to, you know, full price, depending on their income and whether they've accessed the healthcare exchange, as you've mentioned. But actually, since we have gotten the exchange process where more people are able to get health insurance, the number of patients on the sliding scale has drastically reduced.
Because isn't it fantastic? I mean, I think that should be shouted a lot more from the rooftops. Everybody should just go on there if you don't have health insurance and try, because they have some very good insurance for $0 or $20, or, you know, if you want something more, like $60 a month is not unusual. Now, it seems like what Obama originally had put together is really finally in place.
Right. However, it does not include, you know, services that fall under the integrative medicine health umbrella.
No, nothing does. Right. That's the next part of our topic. But at least for basics, at least for blood work, at least for if you do need a prescription for some, you know, for at least for basics, and that somebody is, you're there, you're connected, you have some care,
right?
What if you have children? I mean,
right.
It's amazing what's available right now. I'm excited about it. Now we can go to the integrative part. That's a deeper conversation, yes.
Well, and that's actually what really got me excited about going to Memorial Primary Care, was that, you know, in some ways it was sort of my dream profession, is to work for, you know, the under-resourced patients in a setting that wrapped their arms around them. My staff are all very wonderful. They are all advocates for the patients, very diverse staff, as you can imagine, in Southeast Florida, Hollywood. So, and, you know, always looking out for, you know, the best of the patient, whether they paid nothing for the visit or they paid full price, like, it doesn't matter. Nobody really looks at the insurance other than to know where to order the labs to. And so it's been great for me as a nurse practitioner, because my focus is really, you know, honoring the patient where they're from and helping them to get, you know, the care that they need to support their optimal health and wellness. Also to look at ways, you know, to start, you know, de-prescribing, which a lot of patients don't like taking a lot of medication. So many of my patients come to me on a lot of medications and they're really frustrated and they would like a more natural approach. And so they seek me out on health grades for someone who takes a more natural approach to health and healing, and or they're referred by their friends or family. And so that is my favorite thing to do, is deprescribe. So
that's fantastic. You know, the clinic that I ran for 23 years, and that was back in the 80s, that was the what we did with every single patient. Of course, they came to us and they were not low income, but that is what they wanted, because people are just, for the most part, on too many meds.
Yes. And so, as you know, once you get on a couple of meds, then you may be taking another med for a side effect of the med that you're taking, and so forth and so on. And it can just really snowball into a disaster. So, but if you have the right resources and you have labs and you have a motivated patient and you can figure out what resources are available in their community to support their other concerns and social determinants of health, as you know, you and I have talked about before, the, you know, access to healthy food and transportation and a job, like money in their pocket to actually buy the things they need. Those are so important. You know, when I try to put myself in their shoes and I think, oh my gosh, like, how would I do this? You know? So it's not just like prescribing a supplement to the person, but it's really like a relationship that you build over time and helping patients to figure out how to navigate the system. And in some small way, attempting to decolonize the structures that be, you know?
That's a really good way to put it. So you can't just deprescribe really unless the individual is coming with the mindset in terms of the integrative part of your practice. They need to be willing to make some changes. Like even without more money, you can make cabbage soup instead of fast food hamburgers.
That's right.
But you have to work a little bit, maybe 2 hours a week, which I did, to make it ahead of time and have it frozen. And then defrost it or something like that, where it's not a lot more time and it's not more money, it's less money, but you have to have some skin in the game.
Right, you do. And so there is someone to ignite you or something to ignite you. You know, I think COVID has really shed a light on a lot of these health disparities that we see. It has also kind of, you know, woken people up. Not everybody, but, you know, woken folks up to what can I do for myself? You know, we're so much in a society of, you know, the SAD diet, the standard American diet, and instant fixes and the miracle pill. And we want it now. We want it fast. That's American culture, right? And so it's working two or three jobs just to pay the rent. So a lot of people are really struggling to find sleep, let alone the time to cook at home, you know? So it really does take a lot of navigation, a lot of thinking, and a team. You know, I talked about my staff. Memorial also has legal aid services through a grant, which has been really helpful for a lot of our patients, helping them to figure out some of these barriers that they have to jump. We also have a social worker who works way too hard. We need more of those. We don't have on staff a nutritionist or herbalist or chiropractor, acupuncture. Those things are in my dream.
Right. And I have seen them at other integrative centers. Now, are
yes.
you a one place, like one clinic, or are there other locations?
No, Memorial Primary Care is a network of various different offices, you know, and we're growing, actually. We don't have those particular services because I think the insurances that we're connected with don't offer those services. Although Medicare, some Medicare, maybe all Medicare, does have some way to get acupuncture reimbursed. Chiropractic is well covered. But we don't have it in-house per se.
Yeah.
You know, having things under one roof is extremely important to the patient who takes 2 to 3 buses just to get to you, you know?
Yes, absolutely. So that's something that, you know, you see moving forward, you know, perhaps we'll open up in another venue or another area, but still, you know, you're bringing that concept of deprescribing, which is huge, replacement with much more consciousness about things like sleep and nutrition, you know, a real basic place to start. And then you described to me where you've been able to bring in some of the supportive supplements that you might recommend, and it's very well evidence-based, by the way, where it would be available within the clinic pharmacy. That's a huge step.
Yes. And you helped me with that, Ellen, because I, you know, the pharmacist, the manager of the pharmacy, Janelle, has been really great in working with me and telling me what is realistic, what is feasible, and what is practical, you know, in terms of what they can hold in their small pharmacy versus, you know, the patient being able to get it cheaper outside because they can't order it in bulk or whatever. But we have now omega-3 on site. We have turmeric with black pepper, which is, you know, you helped me find a supplement that was affordable and clean. And that has been really great. We also have magnesium for those that are having magnesium deficient diets. Of course, we always try to work on, you know, how can I get more magnesium in an affordable way and in culturally appropriate ways into the diet. We also have, what else do we have? Some of the things I'd like to have, like probiotics and vitamin D3, are just cheaper to get elsewhere. So we don't have those quite yet. So maybe in the future. But yeah, she's been absolutely great at working with me, and also other providers have, you know, shown interest in using some of these supplements when we know they can, you know, help with arthritis pain, joint pain, bowel movements, you know, overall brain health, things like that. Inflammation, turmeric has been great. I'm getting great results with all three of those supplements, the magnesium, omega-3, and the turmeric that we have on site.
Yeah, I talk about those a lot, even in my book, Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide. Now, once a patient comes in, and you are allowed to call them a patient. You don't have to be, you know, gingerly use the word client, because you are a true healthcare provider as a nurse practitioner, which is a very powerful degree here in Florida.
Well, yes, and it has become more so in recent years. And that's another nice thing about Memorial. They give us, you know, you have to have certain number of years of experience as a practitioner before you work in primary care there, because you're pretty much on your own in terms of the patients that you manage. You do have a collaborating physician per se, but last year, as you know, in the state of Florida, since you have a home in Florida as well, we got autonomous practice authority. But you have to apply for that. You have to show how many, you know, continuing education.
Well, that's good too, right?
You have and all that. So
exactly.
So that just kind of added to it. But I was already having my own panel, what they call, like a group of patients that you manage. And so obviously, if you're not there, you know, you're a collaborating physician, we'll see the patient. Or if you have questions about something that you haven't encountered before, you know, you talk to your collaborating physician for their expertise, but you pretty much are managing your own patients from the minute you get there till the time you leave. You know, you do all the medication management, all the lab management, everything that a internal medicine or primary care practitioner would do.
Right. So then when someone comes in, you said it's almost sort of pre-qualified in terms of someone may be coming to you for that more natural approach to begin with. So what would they leave with? I mean, do you write down those things on a prescription pad just like someone would write drugs, or you just mention it conversationally? Like, how does the procedure work?
So, you know, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care, right?
Oh, that's a beautiful saying.
And nobody can actually find who actually said that first. It wasn't me. But I love that phrase because it really gets at cultural humility. And cultural humility was a term who we do know who coined that. His Melanie Tervalon, who's a public health physician, and Jane Murray Garcia, who was a health educator and clinical administrator. They coined that term. And I think it's a really important term because instead of going in with judgment, like, you know, you're eating a sad diet, you're overweight or you're obese or whatever, going in with, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself. You know, where are you from? What do you do for work? What have you eaten in the last 24 hours? You know, you can gather a lot of information. And there's been studies that say, like, you ask these open-ended questions, the patient actually only takes 90 seconds to respond. 90 seconds. So if you open up your ears and your heart and you really listen deeply, you can gather so much information in that little bit of time that you've given to that patient to speak. And once they've spoken, then you can start asking really educated questions about, you know, getting at the diagnosis. And there's an old saying that like 80% of the diagnosis is in the story. So getting that story is super important, you know, and the rest is the physical exam, which, you know, the physical exam, and a lot of patients complain about this, is that, you know, practitioners don't touch me. They don't listen to my heart. Like, oh, they just put the stethoscope on and took it right off. Like my mom my mom complaining about that before. And, you know, and then getting a full exam, like whether you need to spend that much time on the exam or not, it actually sometimes changes your mind in one direction or the other, you know, because you hear something that you wouldn't have heard, or, you know, you feel something that you wouldn't have felt had you not touched the patient.
But this is a big point, even not just in integrative, in regular medicine,
right?
The way that has degraded. And I've seen this where I'm in the office and I see the doctor never even looks or smells or touches the patient. They are on the other side of the room, delved into that computer, looking for codes the entire 8 minutes. Now, I'm sorry, but this is reality. And then they just write whatever drug corresponds, not to that individual, but to whatever they complained about, a stomach ache, this drug, or a headache, this drug. That's it. No, they don't even look at any possible drug-drug interactions. They don't even know what's going on with that patient. And I can't blame the provider because they have to code everything.
Yeah, so there's this is getting back to the system, right? So there are all these structural problems and structural issues or hurdles that you have to jump in order for the insurance to reimburse you and to have that visit. So a really great skill that I picked up a long time ago was learning how to type without looking. And, and this is a great skill because you can listen to the patient and type. Typically, I don't. Typically, I just spend that first couple of minutes listening to the patient, you know, without any typing, because one, it's distracting to hear typing in the background and you don't feel like you're fully listened to. But if you just spend a couple of minutes listening, it changes the whole dynamics of the whole, you know, of the whole experience. Like there's this book actually that, you know, I had when I was in nurse practitioner school, the 15-minute hour. You know yourself, like you can spend just a few minutes with somebody and you can feel so connected to that person that you just want to keep coming back to them, you know? And sometimes, you know, this can also be a problem because you, when you're not there, you want them to see other people. And, you know, you have a big team that you work with. So, you know, you're always grateful for that. And there's some things about the system that are amazing, but there are other things about the system that are part of colonization that we need to decolonize, you know? And there are exemplars in, you know, that we've had at I Am For Us conferences, for example, that really, you know, they can't seem to work in the system. So they build like a community health center with the community that the community has like authority and power over, that they sort of write the rules. You know, they may have an electronic health system, you know, portal that they use, but it's not, you know, it doesn't dictate everything around the care, you know? And so there are different ways to do things. Now, the question is, can we really change the system as it is, or do we have to deconstruct the system? And so in order to really understand that, you know, you have to do some trainings. One, you've got to do some implicit bias training, number one, to figure out where your biases are, like where you hold the most judgment, you know? Personally, I was an obesist, you know, before I started doing group visits. And then I realized that there's so many factors that go into, you know, weight and where it comes from, and historical trauma, adverse child events, you know, violence, a lot of things that can affect a person and the and the way that their fight or flight system works, you know, and how that affects their weight. So until I did that implicit bias training, you know, and started working in group visits, you know, that really changed. And we can talk more about group visits.
That's the next place we're going to go in our few remaining minutes, because I think that is a tool that I was introduced to through other integrative practices years ago, which allowed much more discussion about things like good nutrition for diabetes instead of just, you know, here's a piece of paper. I mean, it really delved into it. And now with the opening of telemedicine, that's really fabulous in terms of group visits, I think.
Yeah. So group visits are, you know, as you know, they're a billable visit. So you have everybody have the same time appointment and versus different time appointments. So the same time slot. So this is not for a new patient, obviously. So a new patient, you know, just like an acupuncturist would see a new patient, you spend time with the patient, learning the patient's history and all of that, and getting a lot of information, maybe ordering some lab work. And the follow-up visit, you know, you go over like whatever their particular health concerns might be, what diagnosis might come out of that. And strike up a plan, you know, and you alluded that to that before. I actually write, you know, the plan, and it's an agreed plan, right, between the patient and the practitioner. And then after that, there's an opportunity to enter a group setting where you might have a common interest or common goal. Like in the group visits that I ran, it was, you know, chair yoga, you know, looking at nutrient dense food, meditation, things, you know, of that nature. And so we spent, you know, time on that. And then, you know, we did it actually as a free program for the sliding scale patients, but it actually can be billable, and it's more sustainable that way if you do bill. And you bill individually. There's no group code, there's individual code. So like if everyone is there because they have diabetes in common, or they have, you know, weight in common, or whatever it is, then you do it that way. But I think, you know, before you get into that, obviously you want to have some training in groups. You want to go and do some free online implicit bias training. There's also a training called structural competency training, which gets at a lot of the issues around addressing and understanding social and structural determinants of health. Which I can send you the link for, but that's struct comp.org, which practitioners can go to. So those are the two really good tools. And then of course, our website and all of our trainings and conferences that we have annually for the
past. And we do have that. We're getting to the end. So I just want our listeners to know that you can find that link as part of our discussion about today's guest, Dr. Daya Thomas, and you can find more at im4us.org. And then for providers, it's a whole, opens such a wonderful door of what you're doing to allow more people to even conceptualize about bringing down that prescription level, but of course, with testing and appropriately. And, you know, some people might be in a long list. There are some that you can take off that doesn't cause an interaction. You're not going to stop their antipsychotic medications, you know, offhand and let them go into crisis. You know what you're doing. That's what's so important. And I just think it's a wonderful, wonderful tool, because so many healthcare providers want to offer more integrative techniques and discussions. And this gives them a groundwork of how to go about doing that. So thank you so much for your ongoing groundbreaking work.
Thank you, Helen. I hope that we have an opportunity to speak again more about this. And if you want to look for more of my work, you can look for my doctoral dissertation around the reduction of anxiety in the use of integrative group medical visits. It's free online at scholarworks@walden.edu.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com. And all of our live shows, which we just did live today, are then also archived and available on prn.fm. Also at naturalnurse.com, we have a link to it as well. So until next time, this is your host, Dr. Ellen Kamai at naturalnurse.com, along with my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. We're hoping that you stay healthy.